And so we're talking about whether we live our lives over or under God as a culture, as a people. And we've been doing this now for a while. So these are the verses we've been building on. Romans 15, 13, where God pours his hope into us. That hope overflows out into the culture. Because why? He fills us with joy and peace. And so that should overflow out of our lives. It's not for keeping, it's for sharing. And real joy and real peace is not something that you just kind of keep in. It is something that you do share, and you begin to discover that it does, it just kind of spills out. And when we think about the cultural setting, as we have been talking about for the past few weeks, these two things are something that a lot of people don't have right now. They don't have joy and peace. You know, they have them maybe intermittently for a few minutes, but nothing sustainable. And see, the joy and peace that God gives is the only type of joy and peace that is sustainable. That's what makes it different. It's what God does. It's how he works. And so, as a gift from God, we have that. And so, how does that impact the world around us? Well, hopefully, that hope that we have because of that flows out into the culture and makes change. Now, then we also looked at 2 Timothy 2, 1 through 7. We spent most of our time here last week, all our time actually. And we talked about the three analogies that Paul uses with Timothy, where he says there's times you're a soldier, an athlete, and a farmer. And I suggested to you that when we have read it, or at least when I read it as a younger man, I always thought, well, I would pick the one that I liked the best, and that's who I would be. And so I always picked athlete because that's what I wanted to be. But that's not what the passage is talking about. The passage is talking about characteristics of these people and these types of things. And Paul's talking to Timothy, and he's saying, you know, look, I'm going to be dead soon, and I'm going to be gone. And when I'm gone, Ephesus isn't going to get any easier. You know, I mean, and that's kind of a sobering thought. You know, it's not going to get any easier. So, okay, well, can I get another job? Well, no, you can't. But here's what you have to be. You have to approach it like a soldier, an athlete, and a farmer. And you guys talked about the characteristics of those things. We added some to it, and we summarized it. But that's where it is. So in every season of life, you know, you may be finding yourself kind of jumping between the two, or maybe being in this one day, being all three. And that's okay, because you have to be that. And if you're going to stand in the culture that we live in, I can promise you this is what a disciple looks like. This is what it takes to make disciples. This is part of that discipleship process. You have to stand on that line and do these things. It just doesn't happen. And so to get it right, to be that cultural warrior, if you will, those are things that have to happen in your life all the time. And we talked about that. You can go back and listen to it if you want to hear it again. And so now we're looking at level lines. And these are the things that we're looking at that ask the question, how are we doing? You know, and you talk about a bubble stick. You know, some of you use those bubble stick a level, right? Are you half a bubble off? And so you try to decide, are you above or you below that line? You know, and so when God is separated from government, judgment follows. It's always the economy. We talked about that. That which is legal might also be evil. And propaganda can change a nation. And so that's kind of where we are. We're going to jump right back in there. The last few are not as long because we don't have enough weeks for them to be long. But we're going to look at a few more things here. And we're going to jump back into this idea that propaganda can change a nation and go back and because that's where we landed last time. And we were talking about how you model or how do we look back at that history and learn lessons that apply to today? And remember, again, the disclaimer is, I'm not suggesting to you that America is like Nazi Germany. I'm suggesting that some things were happening in Germany prior to Hitler's rise to power that were some cultural trends. And when the culture shifted this way, he was able to keep pushing it that way, and things changed. That's the level line. How are we doing? Are we keeping God where he needs to be, or are we not? Are we sliding down, or are we not? And so Hitler believed it was necessary to totally destroy the credibility of one's opponents. When he dealt with propaganda, his approach was a scorched earth policy. And so for Hitler, there was no doubt about what needed to happen. He wrote about it. He talked about it. He beat this point over and over again. He said, at no time should one ever concede that your opposition is right, even on a single point. In other words, it was complete. It was you're never going to be right. And that is the approach that Hitler took, because again, when you talk about propaganda, it can change a nation. Hitler was so good at this that it has been modeled by others. Today, our culture, it happens. We see it in the media, personal attacks. So anyone who dares to challenge an idea or a concept or a trend or a cultural movement or something that's going on, if you dare to challenge it, we live in a cancel culture society, right? So people are going to cancel it. We don't know how to have conversations. We don't know how to agree or disagree. We don't know how to have that moment where you kind of get to that impasse and you simply say, okay, well, we're not going to come to one heart on this. And so that's okay. I'll pray for you. You pray for me. We'll figure this thing out. You know, we can't. That's sane. That's rational. We don't do that because the culture, the sharks in the culture, have decided to take their playbook, if you will, from the Hitler approach. Take that Marxist approach to it. Let's obliterate. Let's obliterate. Let's destroy. It's the idea that you must destroy any idea that doesn't agree with you, so that the only idea that's acceptable is yours, and everything else is pushed to the extremes. And if you believe or hold on to anything that's not a part of that mainstream, then you're an extreme. And then you add our media touches to it today, and you find yourself in a very interesting, crazy, upside-down world. Because propaganda isn't true. It's propaganda. You know, publicity tends to be true. Propaganda can be anything you want it to be. Sky's red. Say it often enough. People will believe it. You know, start a club, the Red Sky People. You know, the Order of the Red Sky. I mean, you do it long enough, hard enough, follow it enough, you'll find people that will jump in there with you, and then, you know, and then you get the Colorblind Society coming on board because you become a crusader for them as well. And then the next thing you know, you've got a movement happening, and all of a sudden there's red sky. And you begin chasing that, and you just keep pushing it and pushing it. And then if you don't think that you can see a red sky out there, why are you oppressing me? Do you not like the color red? You're an oppressor, and I'm oppressed. And that's wrong. And not only do you need to, you know what? You shouldn't even be able to do that. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. So what you need to do is you need to pay me or compensate me for the grief you've caused me, and at the same time, you need to disappear. Any of you watched Judge Steve Harvey yet? Did you watch that? I sat there this week and thought to myself, good heavens, I have stepped into a world where my brain cells are literally falling out of my ears, real time dying. I've got to get out of this chair, but I just can't turn away. It's the old people's court, except what they've done is they've done the Jerry Springer thing. Hey, if you've got a story and you're messed up, email us, and let's Judge Steve Harvey figure this out. Husband and wife are standing. The husband and wife have been married 14 years, okay? They've got 3 kids. She is suing her husband for $6,000 for emotional distress and damage because he won't eat her cooking. So she's bringing the suit. The producers thought this was a great idea. Hey, bring them in. The husband then is the opponent, is the defendant, I guess. No, yeah. What the other one, plaintiff, defendant, whatever it is. So he has countersued his wife for the same amount because she can't cook as good as his mama. And so he's suing her for the amount of money that he has had to spend on takeout to feed himself, and is suing her for money so she can take cooking lessons. And that's the case. And I'm listening to it, and I'm hearing it lay it out. And I'm thinking, about, this can't. This is not right.
How'd they make it 14 years?
This is not, yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. 14 years of 3 kids. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident, right? I don't think. Anyway, they go through this thing. I mean, and Steve Harvey, in a funny way, and that's the comedy of it, right? Digs in and finds out all that's going on, and he likes Southern cooking, but she likes, and she does, she adds spices. She's from Puerto Rico, so she adds spices to the thing. And when they first got married, she made it just the way he liked it, but then she started adding stuff, and then he didn't like it anymore, so he went to his mom's house and started eating. I mean, it just became this crazy story. And by the time it's in, Steve Harvey comes up with this boneheaded decision that basically looked at the guy and says, dude, you are a howdy-doody-looking dude. I don't even know how you ended up with that fine-looking thing over there. I'm like, you can get away with that on national TV still? But he said it. And then, so he found, and then it comes out at the end of the thing that, you know, that she sleeps till 10:30 every day. He works. At the end of the day, the $6,000 that they were suing for, he was going to pay the bill anyway. And so it's this elaborate, you've picked on me, you've wronged me, and I have to air that, and I have to air it publicly to shame you, because at the end of the day, there's a whole crowd of people in the gallery that are cheering and booing everything that happens, and it becomes this crazy, weird people's court with a gas pane or something dumb. I mean, it's the weirdest thing you've ever seen. And as I'm sitting there watching, I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. This is where we have come to as we deal with people when it comes to relationships. We just are so good anymore. And we are promoting within our culture the ability to minimize and put at arm's length anything that we don't like and anything that we don't want to deal with. And we've been wronged, and we deserve some kind of reward because you wronged me. We're entitled to that. And that's what happens when you start living in a culture that simply runs and everything is about propaganda. And when everything that happens is about, you believe this long enough, you hear this loud enough, you keep beating this point into me, you keep getting to the point where you finally just get to the point where the other person just quits. They just give up. And even in the Steve Harvey episode, I was listening to it, and I was trying to find some kind of spiritual hook to kind of grab onto, but there wasn't a whole lot there. But I was trying to grab into it as I was listening to this relationship that's gone horribly, horribly south. So much so that you put yourself on national television to kind of air this thing out. And I asked the same question. You know, they've been married 14 years, you got 3 kids. How'd that happen? I mean, how did you get here from where you were?
You know, they pay those people to go on our shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Well, that was the $6,000. Yeah, big time, yes.
Then I was thinking they also could be actors in the whole room.
Well, the whole thing could be crazy.
That's real.
Really? That's not what you think? You're not allowed to have a TV anymore. But as you look at it.
Can you be angry or
please? Yeah, I know. Albert Einstein said this. Being a lover of freedom. Now, you have to remember, he was exiled from Germany because he was Jewish. If you didn't know that about Albert Einstein, he was. Being a lover of freedom, when the Nazi revolution came, I looked to the universities to defend it, knowing that they always had boasted of their devotion to the cause of truth, but no, the universities took refuge in silence. And then I looked to the great editors of newspapers whose flaming editorials in days gone by had proclaimed their love of freedom, but like the universities, were silenced in just a few short weeks. I then addressed myself to the authors, to those who had passed themselves off as intellectual guides of Germany, and among whom was frequently discussed the question of freedom and its place in modern life. They are, in turn, very dumb. Only one group stood against the path of Hitler's campaign for suppressing the truth. It was the church. I never had any special interest in the church before. But now I feel a great affection and admiration for it because the church alone has had the courage and the persistence to stand for intellectual truth and moral freedom, and I am forced to confess that what I once despised, I now have to praise without reservation. As Einstein. And when you look back, we talked about the fact that, you know, how God was pushed out of the public square by Hitler, and you ask yourself, well, you know, why didn't the church do more? Because we talked about all the things they didn't do, but at least they did something. And so when you take a look and you try to draw the analogies between then and now, you have to ask yourself, what is the church doing in the world today that steps into a culture to make a difference? Because, see, the church doesn't have the luxury of becoming a cultural mover and shaker if we lose the mission of the church. See, churches want to trend and kind of pattern themselves to kind of mold and mesh to the culture, to become like the culture. But see, the church has a message that they have to share. The church has a cross that we have to anchor to. We have a resurrection story that we have to tell. Because why? Because of what we talked about over here. Look out. Sorry, Brittany. Hit you with this board. We have a source of hope that we are responsible for getting into the culture. We have a source of strength that God gives us that has to come out to the culture. That's our job. That's our role. And I don't care how much propaganda is out there. I don't care what lies are being told out there. I don't care how often you're told you have to be silent or this is right when it's not right. Or you can't say this because it's not politically correct. Or you can't say this because it's not kind. And you can't say this because it's not truth. But if it's true, you got to say it. The church has a role to push back and talk back. It is a fair question to ask for Nazi Germany. It's a fair question to ask for American culture today. Where is the church? But make it more personal. Where are we? Make it even more personal. Where are you? Because we live in a world, a day and age, where there is a battle that's taking place. And the battle that's taking place in our culture, we've been calling out for the last few weeks and we've been looking at it. But don't kid yourself, we live in a world where we have a constant enemy out there beyond just the sharks in the water, but that one of the tools that they use is a constant barrage of propaganda. And remember, what did Hitler say about propaganda? You can't concede one thing. You ever ask yourself the question, why can't anybody ever compromise on anything? Because they're playing from two different playbooks. See, you walk into a situation and you might say, well, we'll find some common ground here. See, you can't find common ground with someone who's playing from a playbook that says, I can't let you be right about anything. And so for a lot of things that we have done, in a lot of ways the church has tried to navigate the world, the church forgot what playbook they ought to be playing out of, and they're trying to find the right playbook, and they forgot that we have the playbook, it's the Bible. And we have truth. And we have the truth of God's word that we have to allow ourselves to become so immersed in, and we have to learn how to communicate it in ways that can be heard. Propaganda can change a nation. And even the church knuckled under for the most part, but not all of them did. And of course, and there are stories about that. And that's another part of history we're not looking at, okay? So that is one of those, I'll go back to the other side again. That is one of those lines that we have to look at. Propaganda can change a nation. Okay? Let me give you the next one. We got to keep moving. And it's simply this. Parents, not the state, are responsible for a child's training. Parents, not the state, are responsible for child's training. Now, interestingly enough, isn't it funny we kind of hit this one this week with some of the stuff that's been going on in the news over the past couple of weeks. In January 2008, Germany's youth welfare office and public officials surrounded the Gorber family's home in a surprise raid. Mr. Gorber was visiting his wife at a local hospital where she had just been admitted because of pregnancy complications with their ninth child. Despite the children's repeated protest, all but the oldest son, age 21, and the daughter, age 20, were taken into custody by the authorities. This is in 2008. Now, this is not Hitler era. This is 2008. Their crime: they refused to send their children to the local public school, but instead chose to homeschool their children. You may not be aware of it, but homeschooling is illegal in Germany. And as a result, because these folks said, we are believers and we are God followers and we want to homeschool our children, the children were taken from the home. They're not allowed to do that. Andre and Frauke, I don't have their last name, I can't even touch it, a Christian family in Hamburg suffered a similar fate. They chose to educate their children at home on the grounds they wanted to be obedient to the Lord. They wanted to take the responsibility for educating their kids. They didn't need the public school system to do so. And in response, the local municipality said, we will apply the full power of the state until this family yields to compulsory education laws. And so they find them. They find him again. Five officers arrested Andre. The officer showed up to forcibly escort the children to school. And finally, as this battle continued, the family lost the custody of their children and the children became wards of the state. Eventually, on a visitation with those kids, they piled them into an RV and they did the Von Trapp family across the mountains, let's run to Austria, because it's illegal to do that in Germany. See, any homeschool family in Germany will tell you that they live in fear of homeschooling their children, that there will be a knock at the door, because the knock at the door could mean that their children are going to be taken by the state. That sounds like Nazi Germany again, doesn't it? And the purpose of this piece of the conversation is to say that any government that chooses to be totalitarian knows that it's essential to set up the educational system for the children. Which is why, then, we as followers and we as Americans do have the right and responsibility to speak back into the way that those things are set up and who's doing what and how it's being run. How many times in the news, as of late, in American culture, have we heard about the infamous Loudoun County School Board? And some of the things that have been going on there. And it's a fair question to say to yourself, how does that happen? How does a school board go so far off the rails? Well, here's the answer. Nobody showed up at the meetings except school board members. That's how it goes off the rail. Why? Because no one cares until it affects them. Why did it come into the spotlight? Because we had a pandemic. See, one of the great gifts of the pandemic is that for the first time in a long time, parents figured out what the kids are being taught. And it brings a level of accountability. It's a good gift of the pandemic. It's the thing that God does in the midst of all the other stuff that doesn't seem so good. God does some good stuff. And the reason that this becomes important is because Hitler also understood that for him to be who he was going to be, he had to take care and control the education of the kids of Germany. And he understood the value of that. He believed that the state, not the family or the church, had first dibs on the child's education. He made no bones about that. Hitler said to parents, I quote, "Your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on. Your descendants, however, will have the opportunity to stand in a new camp. And in a short time, they will know nothing else but this new community." And in another speech, he said this, "This new right will give its youth to no one, but will itself take youth and give its youth their very own education and be responsible for their upbringing." He believed, correctly, that he who controls the youth controls the future. Parents, he insisted, needed to understand the limits of their responsibility. And if they cooperated, all would be well. If they did not, the law was on Hitler's side. Why? Because he wrote the laws. By this point, he had been able to change the laws. In effect, what Hitler was saying is the parents had the responsibility for raising the child's body, but the Third Reich would be in charge of the child's soul. I made a statement one Sunday morning. They got a lot of email and continues to get email that dribbles in often. Still, where I said there is a battle for the soul of the children of America going on right now. Some find that offensive, others agree and say amen. But in Nazi Germany, Hitler was able to eliminate private and denominational Christian schools so that all that was left was public education. How did he eliminate them? He just kept raising the taxes on them. He kept adding laws to the mix. He kept adding standards that they would have to hit when they couldn't hit them, when they couldn't pay, when they couldn't do what they needed to be done. Then they'd broken the law, they were shut down. End of story. Those schools no longer exist. The only ones that exist in are the government schools. And who's in charge of the government schools? Government. And when the government is good, it works well. But what if the government's not good? And a better question is, how do you know? And see, and that's the question that in our culture really becomes the crushing point. How do you know? How do you know? And so then the flip side of that is, and how do you have a responsibility to find out? And the answer is yes. Do you need to be aware? Yes. Do you know what your kids are being taught? Yes. See, I am such a strong advocate of our education systems and wanting to make sure you get it right. I mean, you know, Tommy will tell you this. I mean, he and I sit on an illustrious board of a charter school, which, you know, our job as board members isn't that tough. I mean, we talk, we vote. You know, we can hire and fire a few of the administrators, and that's about it. But, you know, hands-on every day, we don't have to be hands-on every day. I have to be a little bit more hands-on sometimes than I want to be. But I am convinced that one of the reasons that we're there is because there may come a day that we start going down a road we don't need to go down, and I got news for you. That's going to be very painful for the school to get there from where they are right now. Because I know the president and vice president of that board. And I can exert some influence there. Now, I'm not suggesting you go build a school so you can run it the way you want. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that you do need to be informed and you do need to hold accountable those folks who are setting the rules and the regulations. When they go. I'm going to simplify the version of how it happened. You know, when someone talks about critical race theory, and I had an interesting phone call about this the other day, the critical race theory kind of started sneaking into, and it's not in Florida, is not. I mean, we're doing pretty well in Florida. We're not perfect, but we're a lot better than other places. I would take us any day. If you have to live somewhere, you live in Florida or Texas. Stay away from California. That's just my advice. But in Florida and California right now, while this is not the issue, in other school boards, what happened is that curriculum was introduced, philosophies were introduced, and things would happen in these school board settings. And ultimately, they were having school board meetings to empty rooms. I mean, nobody was there. So it was never that you couldn't speak to it. It was never that it was trying to be hidden. It was instead that there was free rein to do what you wanted to do because nobody showed up. Nobody came to speak. Nobody cared. Nobody was checking. There was nobody at the gate, if you will. And again, so then the question comes, well, who's responsible for that? And let's be mercenaries about this. You want to take something over, you want to take something and change the direction of it, what better way to do it than to find something where there's going to be people that vote on things and no one ever goes to the meetings, and so you can get through whatever you want to get through, and when it's all said and done, no one cares, no one's going to stop you, and by the time they catch you, it's just too late. I mean, there is a wicked, evil strategy to that, right? And that becomes a way that it happens. And so for us, that level line is very simply to say, who's in charge of raising your kids? I mean, you've been hearing the hype. I know you've been hearing the hype about this little bill that's running through the state of Florida right now, the Don't Say Gay bill, the bill that doesn't say gay in it. So it was branded appropriately because it doesn't say gay. But at the end of the day, that's not the purpose of the branding. And there's that little rat house down the street that's decided this is the cause they want to jump on. And so they put on their mouse ears and they've jumped on board now saying this is what they want to crusade for. I got news for you. I'm going to be as crass as I can, okay? Because I've certainly never done that before. Good news for you. If I think a teacher has the right to choose my child, to teach my child about choosing their sexuality and their gender and their sexual preferences and practices, that person is a predator, not a teacher. I don't care who you are. You're not having that conversation with my child without finding out that there's a 6'1" seminary-trained arguer that will go nose-to-nose with you, and I don't ever stop. You're a predator. And the question to ask all those folks who want to fight over this, Why do you want the right to teach my child that? That's the answer I want. You give me that answer. When you give me that answer, then I know who you are, and now we can have a conversation. That's the answer you're looking for. So keep asking the question. Why do you want the right to do that? Why should that person have the right to do that? See, because you come to a moment where you look at the culture and you have to ask yourself, who has the right to educate and who has the right to teach your children what they're learning? You as a parent have the right to put them into the environments where you can trust, where you can ask, where you can discover. You as a parent have the right and responsibility, by the way, to do that. All parents don't take advantage of responsibility, which is why we're allowed to get into the situations that we find ourselves in sometimes. See, parenting, last time I checked, is a responsibility. It's not a right, it's a responsibility. It's a God-given responsibility. Nobody in this room has a God-given right to be a parent. The American Constitution does not give you the right to be a parent. Heck, with my parenting skills, I don't have the right to be a parent any day of the week. But neither here nor there, I was going to take that with my children. But you have the responsibility, though. If you choose to expand your family, and it is your choice, then with that choice comes the God-given responsibility of raising your kids. And you have to raise your kids. And if you don't know how to raise your kids, you get help. Because none of my kids came with a manual. And every one of them is different, so different. Different as night and day. And I mean, and I don't know how they turn out so different because the fathering I'm doing is perfect. And so I don't understand how they've ever made a mistake. But you have a responsibility to do that. And that becomes the role of the parent. When parents don't want to do that, and they want to give that responsibility to somebody else, that's what happens. We've had this conversation in the life of church, though, before. See, parents want the church to be responsible for the spiritual upbringing of their children. We're not responsible for that. We are supplemental. We're supplemental. Because no matter what we do on a Sunday or a Wednesday, it's not enough. If you're not going to reinforce it and you're not going to be that spiritual force in their life at home, then what we do here, it's gone by the time they get to the end of the street. Not our job. Not our job to grow your child. It's our job to give you resources to help you grow your child. It's our job to pour into your child to help your child grow. But the growth of your child, that's not our responsibility. And any church that tells you it is, they've lost their minds. See, I don't want the role of parenting your children. I wouldn't give mine to you because I wouldn't do that to you. I love you. But I don't want yours either because I've seen you guys and them, okay? That's a balance of power here. But at the end of the day, that becomes that level line that we in our culture have to look at very carefully. Who is responsible? Because Hitler knew, if I can get the kids, I will take and turn a generation. Remember? It's a great move. Sound of Music, remember? Remember? What was the guy's name? The guy they put in a Nazi uniform, ratted him out, ratted the Von Trapps out. What's his name? Ralph. 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 Yes, Ralph. Bonk. 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 Ralph. Ralph. It was Ralph Ralph. Ralph Ralph ratted him out at the nunnery, at the convent. What was it? The convent. Whatever it was, the nunnery. You know what? They should let me fix the Sound of Music. I could fix the problems in that musical. At the nunnery, they did this thing. Yeah, nunnery works. I mean, yeah, nunnery's good. Yeah, that's what I would call it. It's a nunnery. It's a nunnery. It's a nunnery. They drink Blue Nun, but hopefully you kick the habit. Let's pray, and we're done. God, I know there's a point I was making, but I don't know what it was. God, we thank you that you allow us the responsibility of being able to step into a world that is confusing and overwhelming, but allow us to look at history and the world around us and see things as they are and as much as we possibly can, But then step away from that with a responsibility and desire to get it right and to make a difference in the world around us. God, help us to do that. Help us to be those agents of change in the world. Help us to be people who offer hope. Help us to be people who are so attractive because of what you've done in our lives that others will look at us and catch a glimpse of you. And then help us not to be afraid to share the reason for our hope and the joy and the peace that we have. The truth that only you can give. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. See you guys Sunday.